Right, let me confirm. Jed, are you with us?
I am.
All righty. We are set and ready to roll for our Media Biz Power Hour, an educational teleseminar for those of you in the media space. Whether you're selling ads into print, your newsletter, or your website, whether your circulation is free or paid or controlled, you are in the right spot. Whether you're selling ads for a newspaper, a magazine, or a specialty or niche publication of some kind, the information we're going to share with you will be directly related to that. Over the course of the last 24 years, I have never done, and we have never done, anything related to being a change agent. This is a very new and exciting topic, and you'll laugh as we kind of roll along during the course of this teleseminar. You're going to say, Ernest and Jed, in this media space, it's a permanent change, of which we'll talk about that, because I'm going to reference something called metered lines from the 70s that'll bring us all the way back, Jed, to 2019, a little funny story about that. But as we're getting settled in, we want to encourage you, close your office door, reduce any of the background noise, turn off anything on the electronic side, try to find just a quiet spot to get settled in. It's not an accident that there's not something on your screen today that would create many tasking or multitasking. Very simply, the very best in adult education says the more notes you make, the more notes you take, the more that will transfer the knowledge. And with today's topic, you'll be able to incorporate this knowledge and deploy it immediately at the end of the teleseminar. With me is Jed, who is the CEO and founder of Media Biz. And Jed, I always love some opening words. Tell us what's cooking at Media Biz. tell me what's going on before we roll into our topic. I'll do a brief introduction and we'll kick her off. Let's go.
All right. Thank you. Well, thanks, Ernest. Thank you all for joining us. Ernest does a great job with these teleseminars. I always learn a lot. And thank you for taking an hour out of your day to participate with us. My name is Jed Gould. I'm the president of Media Biz. We have been working with publications for 20 years now, working on basically one thing, driving revenue to print publications. We do this in a variety of different ways, but our main sort of foundation is we track the results that are generated by the ads that we place. So we know exactly how many people respond to an ad, where they're coming from, in a lot of cases whether they end up buying. And we are in the midst. We've been doing this, as I said, for about 20 years, and we're in the midst of what could turn out to be our best month in the history of MediaBit. So we're in the midst of a month where we're getting more response for the ads that we place than we ever have before. Circulations in a lot of cases have declined, for many print publications, but I think that, you know, the results that we're getting really speaks to how print can work and how print can generate a really strong response, even though, you know, in some cases, circulations have declined, readership has declined. It's a really positive thing that we see going on, because it's August, which isn't typically a fantastic month when it comes to response, and it goes to show sort of what's going on out there in print and how people are using print and responding to it. So it's really, we're pretty excited. You know, July was also very, very strong for us, and like I said, August looks to be like it could be. It's still have a few days to go, but still could be our strongest month for response ever. So it's very very encouraging.
Very encouraging from that perspective. And when you listen to Jed speak, they remember that MediaBiz place ads in tens of thousands of magazines, hundreds of thousands of ads purchase, millions and millions of inbound leads, prospects, and sales and revenues generated as a result of working with MediaBiz. So I truly believe, Jed, you and your team sit at this apex of advertisers on the left and results on the right, and I don't think anybody sits at that keyboard in the world. I think you have the most unique view. I've said this for a long, long time. And when Jed shares what he knows and shares the insight that he brings. It's very, very insightful from that perspective. So, Jed, thank you so much. Really appreciate that. By way of brief introduction, my name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. Gosh, I've been in the advertising sales industry since 86, really mid-80s. I launched three of my own publications. I know what it means to be an entrepreneur and to bootstrap and roll things up, but on the other side, I was a leader in a billion-dollar media group, so I understand what it means to be in a corporate boardroom, rolling up corporate boards, and I know what it means to have half my compensation tied directly to hitting my budget. So when the kitchen is hot, I felt it, and I had to figure out how to resolve that. We launched Power Hour in 1995. And now we've coached more than 2,700 advertising sales teams and leaders around the world in 14 time zones over the last 24 years. It's really been a joy and a delight. Lastly, very briefly, we run every single Tuesday a live weekly Ad Sales Academy. It looks similar to this. You dial in like this. The only difference is we're fielding your questions live. And the day before, you get materials and audio and so forth. You listen to that. It takes about 15 minutes to prepare. And then you join me on Tuesday, and we help you with your sales selling success. So come join us if you'd like to do that. And then lastly, our goal for today, we have three specific areas or goals that we want to share with you. Number one, Jed and I hope to share new ideas. We want to spur and stir your thinking and your ideas, expand the possibilities. We want you to stretch and in some cases to sweat towards the things that you want to accomplish related to your media sales success. Number two, if you hear something that we're talking about that you're already doing, sure, we send you a virtual high five. Simply confirms that you're doing the very best of best practices in our space and sector. Third is the serendipitous. Stay tuned. Watch as we roll along. As Jed and I are talking about something, it might spark another idea you don't even know or expect. Beautiful. And frankly, as we are sharing with you and we're bantering back and forth, you're going to hear things from Jed and myself that we hadn't planned that even further expand a point or clarify or give another example. So, Jed, today, are you a change agent, right? The title of our teleseminar, are you a change agent within your media ad sales team, right? And you again pause and say, Ernest, all that's going on in media of all kinds is constantly changing. And I think we should all agree, in one of my earlier media positions, I worked for a CEO by the name of Marshall, and Marshall said the only thing permanent was change. And how true that is today in the space of what's happened, the speed of technology, the speeds of change, and certainly what's been happening in the media space. So let's begin with a little foundational conversation, some examples. We promised Jed to talk about 8 steps for being a successful change agent, right, within your media ad sales team. And let's go down that path because that's going to give us sort of a common language of the way that we're going to work this, the way that it works, and then, of course, we're going to follow that up with how that impacts ad sales. We're going to talk about the difference between being a change agent and a change champion, and then we're going to wrap up and talk about what happens when it doesn't go as planned. Let's kind of navigate that piece and understand that change can sometimes hurt, so change can break things, but frankly, change on the other side. Look at literally the internet and how that's changed our world. Let's bring it to Google. How does that change our world and digital ad sales and clicks and tracking and all of those things? So we sort of pause and say sometimes we have to break an egg to make an omelet. Let's also be willing to embrace that on the other side, that change can be very, very positive. And in many cases, in this, given the state of technology and media today, it is required and demanded of us. So let's go down the path. Number one, to be a change agent, you have to have a clear vision. You have to have a vision for what it is you want to accomplish, but you have to be willing to co-create it. So this is your classic. You can't be in a bull in a china shop and expect to get anything done, right? Very simply, you're going to break things. And in fact, if you break crystal, Waterford crystal, for example, there's no putting it back together. If you believe you're going to charge into your next sales meeting, jump up on the desk and demand change and expect to get it and that everyone will follow, it is just simply not the case and true, okay? So that old classic adage of walk softly and carry a small stick, not a big stick, we'll modify it for our purpose today. Walk softly and carry a small stick. Bring your team along. Point number one, okay? Point number two, you need to be patient as a change agent, but you also have to be persistent. Okay, so an example of this, Jed, back in my corporate days, there was a lot of discussion back and forth of distribution, circulation, geographical areas, and so forth. And we had markets in San Diego, Orange County, Los Angeles, and the Inland Empire. Inland Empire also butted up to Palm Springs. We knew Palm Springs was seasonal, and the question always remained, would we go out to Palm Springs? Just that classic conversation of, do we expand out? Do we add more territory? Can we get enough sales to do so? You know, and those kinds of conversations float right into being change agents, because why? We were making decisions about new revenue, new markets, new territory. At any time this, and frankly, when we've worked with media groups, we have conversations. It's not always about expanding. Sometimes there's value in expanding because three of your direct competitors are. Sometimes there's an opportunity to contract because three are, and by you contract, you can be more concentrated in a particular area or a particular zone, whatever that might be. So we know that this piece about being patient yet persistent is certainly key. Number three. Asking tough questions, right? If we're going to be a change agent, we have to ask tough questions on one side, but we have to be listening to what comes back on the other side, right? So we may be given an opportunity. Let's imagine we were working with one of our media clients, and we were working in the snowmobile space. And the question was, gee, would there be any access to go out to the snowmobile dealers? Might they share their list? Might they share their data? How would that enhance our direct mail approach? Could there be a strategic alliance there or not? You know, these are the kinds of things that no one had ever imagined or ever thought was possible, but suddenly we're opening up these conversations with these snowmobile manufacturers, and they were very receptive to what we were presenting. So sometimes when we're rolling out and we're looking to make significant change, we get even more than we expect with even less resistance, and frankly, we're even more giddy from that perspective. Let's take one more point, and then, Jed, I'll pause and, of course, always love your insight. It takes strong relationships, right? Point number four of the eight, it takes strong relationships, and we have to build trust in order to be change agents. An example of this, again, Jed, in my corporate days, if you go to a grocery store, convenience store, or drugstore, and you see those racks that are sit right near the door as you're walking out, those are free publication racks. And going back into the mid-'80s, I founded a company to do that. We began to roll that out throughout central part of California, then into Southern California. Today we know it's long been, my gosh, for probably 25 years, a national brand, and all kinds of competitiveness came as a result from that. In the early days, Jed, we would charge, $21 or eight pockets. Each publisher paid $3, and because we administered the rack, our pocket was free. Okay, $21. Today those pockets can run as high as $203 per pocket per month. That's how much it's changed from those early days. But we had to go out, and what was the change? Well, we wanted circulation in a grocery store, and we wanted to have that kind of visibility. Then we wanted that kind of branding to be able to say, gee, you could go pick it up at any grocery store. And of course, advertisers could see it. It had never been done before. Free publications had normally been put on little countertops and little wire racks and racks that would get kicked over. And I'll never forget going into a grocery store, talking to a manager in the Central Valley, and the reason it came about with these wire racks is I said, my God, look at this, all these shapes and sizes. And honestly, there must have been 18 or 20 of them spewed across the exit door. And the manager looked at me and said, what am I going to do, Ernest? You know, well, this is an absolute mess. This is terrible. Frankly, someone's going to trip and someone's going to fall. And to which I said, you're right. And I think I've got an idea for you. And we went out, built a prototype, brought it back, made it a prototype store. All the managers came in. The regionals came in. The VPs came to look at it. It was near their corporate offices. And the rest is history. And here we are, you know, 25, 30 years later. And those rack programs have become literally an institution at the exit door. That's the kind of change and change agent kind of work in those days. That was pretty profound. And first, then the question was, gee, can I be in the rack? Then it took on a little more, if I'm producing an auto publication, do I really want my competitor? We then began exclusives of the categories, and then it went on to become a very, very aggressive, competitive sort of negotiating war between rack companies and the retailers who loved that free money for that space. So generally
right.
comments about vision, persistence, listening, or trust that you might share an observation around.
Well, you know, I think, you know, I think that on the trust front, I mean, one of the things that I think is really interesting about this topic is that, you know, one of the things that technology has sort of given us is the ability to make change very, very quickly, right? You know, you just use the example of the racks, and that's a good example because, you know, that's sort of a pre-technology, you know, invention, so to speak, and that's an example where, you know, even though you were moving at, you know, sort of what you probably considered to be light speed at the time, right? It probably took several weeks or a month, right, to get the prototype. And then it took, you know, another week to sort of, you know, to, I mean, there was a lot more sort of, you know, time involved that probably gave you the chance to kind of hone your idea. I mean, one of the issues that I often run into, and one of the many mistakes that I often make is that I'll get an idea for a change, and because, you know, let's say if it's a change about how we're handling emails or how we're handling data or how we're handling, you know, a website, I'll get an idea for a change and I can make it happen, you know, before I leave today, right? But the problem is that very often it's not a very good idea or I haven't fully thought out kind of the ramifications of it. And that's where, you know, I personally get a lot of benefit from the people around me, the people I work with, who are able to sort of say to me, yeah, that I see where you're going with that, but you're really, that's not going to work, or, you know, that's a bad idea. And so without that sort of stop, you know, without that backstop of, you know, mm-hmm. of people telling me, you know, good idea, but it's not going to achieve what you're hoping it will type of thing. You know, I would very often, take change to its extreme, and probably, you know, it would be a detriment to what I'm trying to achieve.
So
it's interesting how quickly you can do it, right? And you have
right.
to have those backstops.
You are right. Tech companies often talk about fail faster to succeed faster. So they'll literally tee up a beta version, some tweak on their website, and then go realize that they broke some coding, or they'll go, wow, no one's engaging, so we'll shift by the afternoon, and then still no one's engaging, and they'll make another shift in the morning, unbeknownst to us, and it starts to click and work along, right? And you
right,
can think about
right.
some of the things that you've seen on social media. I mean, look at the number of characters in Twitter, and why did they make that expansion? Well, that was a beta test, right? Look at, you know, look what Facebook has done with the emojis and you know, the way that we can, you know, share, you know, pictures, and first it was words, and then it was pictures, then it was video, and all of the things that sort of bring us along on that side. So let's continue with so we have kind of a common language here. The four additional points related to being a change agent, number five, embrace the resistance. There is going to be resistance when you're trying to embrace change. A little story related to this. There was a wonderful dynamic salesperson that worked for me, Jed. I've shared this story off and on over the years. Her name was Teresa. Teresa came into my office and she said, hey, Ernest, I have an idea. Listen, I want to go out and I want to survey my advertisers. I want to get some information from them. I'm going to grab it, cloak it, and share it back with them at the end of every month, and it will be highly valuable, and I think that they will see it as valuable, and it will really let me share the insight to show that I care about their biz and I'm a thought leader. And to which I said, do you think those advertisers are going to give you that kind of information? She said, I think it will, but I don't know. But I want to shake the apple cart a little bit, and I really feel that this would be valuable. She went out and had resistance. And one by one, they said, no, I won't share. And then one said, yes, I will. And then the next one did, and the next one did. And she said, guess what? The first month didn't go as well as I would like, but I got the data, and I shared it with those that provided the information. Then I went to the ones who didn't, and I showed them pieces of the data, pieces. And they were so excited about that, they said, oh, my God, I would love to see all of it, to which Teresa said, yes, I would like to share that with you, but I need you to give me your data. I'll cloak it so that you're not sharing anything confidential. I'll cloak it so it's available for you, and I'll provide it even richer. They said yes, and by the next month, she had 70-80% response, and by the end of the third month, everybody was on board. It was absolutely amazing. And then she took that, being the change agent that she was and still remains today, she took that process and rolled it right up and said, now I'm going to use this tool to go share with my prospective advertisers. And they were eating out of her hand. It was the most unbelievable piece. She wanted to share little bits. Once they realized they had to become an advertiser to get all of it, they were immediately on board and, of course, sharing the information. And yet it mirrors right up to the tracking kind of information that we're talking about. So embrace the resistance. I tell the Teresa story because it was profound. Number six, get buy-in. To be a change agent, you need buy-in from your team. You need buy-in from technology. You need buy-in from ad agencies or advertisers or potential advertisers. And Jed, the best example I have on this is the advent of what? Tracking of ads and tracking of inbound calls and leads and prospects. And you go, Ernest, hang on, that's me, right? I mean, think about the early days of advertisers. You know, I remember like one of the early pushbacks going, yeah, but it's a toll-free number. And I remember having to say to the advertiser, do you remember who used to be the only companies who had a toll-free number? They were the biggest companies in the world, companies like Pitney Bowes or Xerox or Motorola. Those are the ones that could pay for those inbound calls. Do we all remember what long distance used to charge? So if you saw a toll-free number, and the advertiser's like, oh, yeah, I guess that's right. You know, I mean, just that whole piece, Jed, right? You saw that in the early days when you began talking to advertisers about the idea of tracking and reporting information, right?
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's true. And there, you know, there's some companies that really believe in that sort of local number as being something that that gives people confidence, right? And I can understand that argument to some extent when it comes to some businesses, for example, local contractors maybe, or people that are, you know, where being local is a huge advantage. We don't see it being as much of a factor when it comes to larger companies. But interestingly enough, Ernest, and I think you probably know this, but just so people on the call realize it, when it comes to tracking phone numbers, you can now use local numbers in the same way that you use 800 numbers. So you can use local numbers and track them in exactly the same way that you track 800 numbers. So just to take a step back, you know, what Ernest is referring to is sort of the tracking of information that's received through an ad and tracking it through primarily through 800 numbers. And what we do here at MediaBids is we place thousands of ads a week, and we every single ad has a unique 800 number, and in most cases also a unique URL. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to understand what ads are generating response, what publications are generating response, what people are doing once they get where they want to go. You know, are they buying? Are they are they just getting one piece of information and then hanging up the phone? You know, we like to understand better what it is that's actually happening with a transaction. And so we, you know, as Ernest suggested, we in the early days received enormous pushback from this. You know, publications didn't like the idea. Advertisers didn't particularly like the idea because they considered that information to be theirs. They weren't all that comfortable sharing it. Publications didn't like the idea. Honestly, I think to a large extent because many, many publications in the world today are, and I, you know, just sort of lack confidence. They don't believe in that their ads are going to generate the kind of response that's going to impress anyone. So the easiest thing to do is just not to not measure it, you know, because mm-hmm. if you don't measure it, you don't have to address it. And I think that, you know, what we found through, you know, by sort of just, you know, literally decades of just grinding on it, is that once you actually get that data, in most cases, it's a really good story to tell. You know, there certainly are cases where an ad performs worse than we thought it would, but I would rather have that. I'd rather be able to call up a publication and say, hey, this ad that you're running, it's just not working. I don't know what it is. It might be your readership. It might be the ad. It might be, you know, the time of year. It might be a lot of things. But let's make a change, right? And I think that that's a much more pleasant conversation to have than to just stop running an ad as an advertiser. I'm talking now as an advertiser. I'd rather do that than to call up a publication and say, just cancel the rest of my contract or cancel, you know, I'm not going to run any more ads. Why? Because it's not working. And I'm not going to even give you the opportunity to try to change it, right? You know, sometimes publications have great ideas on how it can be changed. So just to recap, I mean, we got a lot of resistance from the whole idea of tracking. We were aided enormously, by the way, by the fact that every other medium around the same time began offering tracking and began making it readily available. What we were doing was unique in print, but it wasn't unique in the world of advertising. Mm-hmm. And that really helped us as well in terms of changing people's minds.
And let me just insert right behind that piece, okay? So I spoke with last week a woman who was an executive back in the Yellow Page days. And listen to this piece. She drove sales. She grew sales from 1,500 to 5,000. They were making acquisitions all over the world. This is Yellow Pages, okay? They were doing $350 million in sales, and when she finished her tenure, they were at $2 billion, okay?
Wow.
And she slipped into a conversation about metered lines, okay? You remember what metered lines were?
I don't think so. I don't think I know.
Metered lines were what the phone company would set up as phone tracking. That's what they were.
Oh, is that right?
Metered lines. They would say, hey, look, the sales rep would come in and say, hey, we have an attorney. They have a full page ad. They don't want to renew. They don't think they're getting results. And she said, put a metered line on. We'll see you next year. That was it. They would sell it, and they would have to pay per minute for every one of those calls that came in so that they could prove to that attorney that, in fact, they were driving results. Well, what are metered lines? What we do today?
Yeah.
What was old is what is new. She rang my bell, Jed. I had not heard the word metered lines in so long. Every now and then I would hear, because, you know, we would be selling against the phone book, right? And that's what she said. That was my secret sauce behind the scenes. And I was like, oh, my God, I have to bring that for today's Telesarmina, because she told me a story, just blew my mind. But it's a reminder that they were doing what? They were change agents even back 30 and 40 years ago, that if it cost them money for that tracking, they still were willing to do it. And that's the point here, okay, that was still a consideration, and therefore that's where we talk about getting the buy-in to initiate that, because she had to get approval. Hey, we're going to have a new category called metered lines, and we're going to spend some money. It's going to cost us on a per-minute basis, and we have no idea what it's going to cost us, but it's going to validate to that attorney, and they're going to renew, and the upside on ROI will definitely make sense. And by the way, the next 10 attorneys aren't going to even question us. They're going to assume it's working, so we don't have to put in metered lines for them. And she was right again. Remember, $350 million to $2 billion. She grew as a result of metered lines and, of course, working with her sales team and the sales strategies. But that was always her backstop. Here we are again talking about tracking decades later. It cracked me up. Two more points about being a change agent, okay? MPM, which stands for Map It, Plan It, and Measure It. We'll talk more about that. I'm a big believer in having a dashboard. Anytime you're deploying change, we'll get more specific about that. And then lastly, make change a cultural company shift. Again, speed of the team, speed matters. Everything is moving quickly related to the technology. You heard me say a few minutes ago, fail faster to succeed faster is one of technology's sort of terms as well. So let's bring this now, Jed, back around and talk about how does this impact new ad sales, right? What does it mean when you're actively and aggressive? Are you changing your CERC? Are you changing your geo? Are you changing the demographics? Are you changing editorial? Are you changing your SEO? Are you changing your newsletter subscribers? Are you adding Smart Match alliances? Are you working on your tracking? We could go on and on and on. That's just a shotgun list of all the places where you can look to be a change agent, depending on what the needs are of your particular media team. And so the point in that, you know, sort of rolling list of things is there's no secret sauce in there. You've got to get it all right, but each and every one of you have different things, different combinations, right? Am I going to make an omelet with, you know, just a little butter? Jed, you may go, that'd be great. Would some of you like, you know, throw every veggie in there, you know, and whip up and put some Swiss cheese on top? That's a different omelet. In other words, different ingredients gives you a different omelet, all right? But as a result of being a change agent, right, and getting toward your goals, what happens? Good and great things. We drive more ad sales. Positively, absolutely. When you get the formula right, it is unbelievable. Jed, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was working with one of our media clients, and I was invited into a conference call with their team, and we got to chatting about a couple areas, and I said, well, hey, I'd like to roll out some things. We have to do doom, 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 doom. And then they were like, holy smokes, like, where did you get that? Or where do you? I was like, no, that's the formula. That, you know, this is a bacon and cheese omelet, no veggies. You know, we're just going to do bacon and cheese, no veggies in there. And every single one of you from a media perspective are looking for that formula to drive new ad sales, to gain better renewals, right, to improve your ad results, something near and dear to Jed and the group at MediaBids. I mean, they want their ads to drive great numbers. They want you to post great numbers. They want great response to the tracking lines and the tracking methodology, and good and great things happen on the other side, okay? The other piece, what else happens? We take away competitor ads. There is nothing like success and momentum, because in that success and momentum, you're doing what? Pulling ads away from competitors. Isn't it a beautiful thing when you're up by 40 pages and they're down by 40 pages? Isn't it great on the digital side that you're up by 40 advertisers and they went backward on the digital side by 40 advertisers? Same exact model. It's momentum and mojo on that side. It also means that you become more attractive to Smart Match Alliance partners and partnerships. The title of my book from 12 years ago, Smart Match Alliance, is the very essence of 1 + 1 = 5. You become more alliance-able when you walk into a potential alliance partner and you can show them that you have 400 advertisers, whether it's digital, newsletter, or on the print side, and your closest competitor has 100 by comparison, you become more attractive. For example, one of our strategies for media success has been to corner the market on trade shows or consumer shows and events, and we publish either the directory or the consumer guide or the information that's going to be handed to those that are coming in, which means we also exclude competitors. That's another way we become more attractive when we're the dominant person in the marketplace and the dominant media company. And then lastly, for those of you who are the presidents, the owners, the CEOs of your company, you create what? Greater net worth of your company. Your company's going to sell for a premium on the day that you're ready to sell it. So in summary, there's three big impacts that happen with being a change agent and looking for what else we need. Number one, it impacts your team and your internal morale, and that is a very positive kind of momentum we want internally. When a team goes, I got this, I'll take that renewal, I can't wait, I'm winning this appointment, I came back to get this sale. We used to have, Jed, in my corporate offices, we had a big ship bell that you'd put on a big boat, and we called it the ring of success. And if you sold an ad, you rang it down the hall, and it was, people were like, hey, what's that noise? Another sale just came in. What's that noise? Another sale just came in. To hear that bell ring, and the ring of success, I can still hear it echoing in my ear. That's the impact of the change agent.
Hold on.
What?
Hold on, Ernest. Yeah? Ready?
Yeah.
we've got one, too.
Hey, wait. You're telling me. Plus years we've worked together, you've never had the ring of success. I don't know what to say. I very flustered right now. you kill me. I'm thinking, oh, no, where is he going? So, impact number one, the ring of success, your team. Impact number two, when you do these things well as a change agent, what else happens? You improve your readership, right? Whether it's your circulation or your distribution, paid, free, or controlled, you improve your readers' engagement and the readership. And then number three, of course, you're the impact that's so positive on your advertisers, prospective advertisers, and your ad agencies and the results that they're enjoying from that, okay? So there are good and great things from coming from being a change agent. Let me feel let's take a couple of questions here, Jed.
Sure.
Hezzy from New York asks the question, what can one expect should one be able to attain change agent status? Well, you heard a bit of a summary here, right, Hezzy? Change agent status simply means that you're moving towards your goals faster and you're more successful than your other media competitors. There's no greater joy than being able to walk in with the thump of success, if it's on the print side, or a summary of your SEO rankings compared to competitors, which means you're getting that much more visibility, or a rundown of all of the law firms that you're working with, excluding two, that you have 398 of them, or chiropractors, or RV dealerships, or realtors, or whoever that might be. There's nothing more joy-filled than being able to accomplish your goal. And Jed, certainly the areas that you've made shifts with media bids over the years, as you've watched that, you know, listen, there are times that, you know, hey, we stub our toe, but there's other times you go, man, that was the right decision at the right moment. You follow me, Jed?
It's true, but, you know, what's interesting, you know, when I'm listening to you sort of, you know, explain this, is that you know, I wonder sometimes if people who are sort of most responsible for change oftentimes would view themselves as a change agent. I think that in a lot of cases they wouldn't. I think that they would sort of say to themselves, you know what, the steps that we're taking are sort of a logical progression based on the information that we have. And I think that in a lot of cases is like the key to change. And I mean, you know, we use the example of tracking ads, but that's just one example. But I think that a lot of times when you're immersed in something and when you understand it and you see, you know, sort of opportunities that may not exist, right, the change almost becomes to maybe obvious is too strong a word, but at least sort of, you know, apparent, right? And so, you know, it's really just a matter of what steps are you going to take to sort of get to that place which you and other people in your position can see the opportunities that exist, but you have to kind of break out of your safety zone and sort of, you know, give it a try.
You bet. Absolutely. So that's kind of a nice little segue. And, Hezzy, we're hoping that's helpful for you. Thank you so much for joining us here. And we appreciate your question. And we have others that we'll continue to work and weave in here. The next piece that we promised to cover, right, is we said, what is the difference between a change agent and a change champion? Okay, so let's get a little bit more granular. Number one, as a change champion, you need to identify your allies, those who are already on board. So whatever that strategy might be, a change to your website, impact on your newsletter, new alliance partnerships, improvement of your distribution or circulation, you're identifying your allies, those who support your path. Number two, you're rallying the adversaries. You have to rally those who are not in agreement on the other side. To be a change champion, you have to understand who is where and what they need in order to move forward. And it also means we have to chip away at that resistance to what the changes are you're going to deploy, but we have to also stay and be flexible. Once again, we cannot be a bull in a china shop for that. But even more granular, we have to sort of think about the organizational charts, sort of, you know, am I going to take this up the ladder to ownership? Is this coming from ownership down the ladder to the media team? Am I going to work down the ladder, so to speak, and draw in and make certain I have my ops or I have my circ or I have my admin, that I've got everybody sort of working along the path? A little story related to this. Jed, you know I have two sons and a wonderful daughter. And during one of her summers, she was given an opportunity to work as an intern at a little bitty company on the West Coast called Google. very difficult company to get in. She wanted to step into their marketing arena. She's in the middle of a 10-week internship. Speaking of change agent, she looks around and says, you know, there's so many great people and great ideas. This is simply amazing. She rolls up to her direct leader and says, hey, I think we should have like Shark Tank for Google worldwide that people can bring their best ideas, present it, and I think we should fund it. And her leader looks at her and goes, I think that's extraordinary. Let's roll it out. Let's kick it off. He pushes it up the chain of command. It goes worldwide. In the span of 3 weeks, anyone and everyone who had a great and smart idea submitted it. They winnowed it down to 30. 10 were flown in from around the world and made presentations. $3 million was awarded on the spot to the winning three.
Wow.
It was amazing. Okay. My daughter
cool.
rode that wave. No one ever forgot the intern that hit Google. Most of those who worked as interns were given job offers in January and February. Hers was given the first week in September before college even began. And she was asked
wow.
to, you know, keep that private, and off she went. I tell that story, obviously, as a proud father. But here we're talking about Google, and it wasn't so many years ago that she rolled out an idea and said, I have an idea, and I think this is possible, and they ran it. And this is a perfect example that she ran it up to her immediate reporting manager, who took it up another notch, and poof, out it went. So it's important to recognize, think strategically related to your organizational chart, who's in, who's not, and so forth. Now, another key piece, even more granular, look for similar change or look to bring change to your current organization in a couple of places. Number one, maybe you had something in a prior company. Maybe there was something in a prior company in your media selling experience that you want to bring to the new organization. Some will support it, some won't. How are you going to move it forward? Because you knew that was a really valuable part. Sometimes we learn from our competitors. Quick example, I gave that trade show consumer event story. Well, if you've ever been in a media space where you said, well, gee, gosh, we sell ads in the remodeling space, and there's an amazing home and garden show. Clearly, we want to be there. Our advertisers would benefit, and clearly, we want to waltz our way in the door. And you go to register, and you go to set up your trade show booth, and the organizers go, I'm sorry, we don't want your check. We're not accepting your registration. You're not even permitted to come here because your competitor does our show guide, has the dominant place, and they've asked us for an exclusive. That is an example, by the way, that of a truthful story. I call that getting frosted. We never want to be frosted. That's an example where you learn as a change agent that something I'm observing that a competitor might have done at that show, A, will never happen again, and B, I'm going to identify every other show to make certain that I return the frosting back. And I mean frosting, not as in cake frosting, but I mean as in frigid. Okay? So we learn sometimes from competitors something they're doing that we're either going to match, mirror, or far surpass, okay? Again, from this change perspective, sometimes we learn it from advertisers. You know, if you stop and listen, one of our earlier principles, if you stop and listen to other advertisers that you're working with, they'll tell you, you know, we tried this direct mail campaign. It didn't work. We tried putting these signs out. That didn't work. We tried billboards. We did okay with that. We did, ran some radio ads. But you know what really worked is, and you're going to hear that in one of your 10 o'clock meetings on a Tuesday. And you're going to go, wow, what an epiphany. I didn't realize that, gee, chiropractors, you know, really benefit from, or I just learned from my chiropractor, boom, and I've been doing this for like 3 months or 3 years, and I've never heard that before. I've never heard Jed ring a bell like you did today. See, I'm saying green and growing. The point is, if you, the moment you learn that 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, you share it with your team, but then you begin to incorporate, and your next meeting at 11, and your next meeting at 12, and your next meeting at 2 that afternoon, you get to incorporate all of those things. That's the important point here, okay? That's the piece that sometimes you learn from, sometimes the same from ad agencies. Jed, how many presentations have you given to ad agencies where maybe you talk to them about phone tracking, and they said, yeah, but we like some digital tracking, and they said, what we really would like is what? A custom-specific URL, right? Think about, you didn't
right.
always ask for that or expect it. There was a moment, right?
Sure, yeah, no, absolutely, and I think – right. The more immersed you get into it, right, the more you know, changes like that become, you know, become necessary and obvious, and you're forced to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you may or may not remember exactly the moment that happened, or that a ad agency or an advertiser said, no, we're not going forward unless we do this. Or maybe you said it on the other side and said, look, if we want to seal this up and we want no leakage, I want a standing landing page that has nothing but the information and a form to fill out, or a dedicated email address or a dedicated phone number there. We could even put a separate tracking number there, separate even from the print side, and we'll button it all up. And then the caveat that says, but just to clarify, that's got to be a standalone page, because if that page lets them click into your website or take any other action, leakage, they're gone. They'll go into your website, right, and they'll commerce, but how will you and how will we track them? This, again, comes back to when we're change agents, we will learn and see things. And the last point related to this, Jed, is sometimes it's not from an advertiser, it's not from an agency, it's not from a competitor or patch up. Sometimes it's just outside the sector. Sometimes you might just read something, you know, about a paving company that has nothing to do with your chiropractors, but there's something interesting. Maybe there's an award program or a reward program that they're doing, or something that you go, God, that's an inkling to an idea. It's what we talked about, Jed, at the very beginning of this teleseminar. Sometimes those serendipitous things come up, so just be open and be thinking about the possibility from that perspective. Lastly, related
and a great,
to...
And just to add, yep, to Jed, that, just to add really quickly, Ernest, like a great place for people in the print world to look is online, right? Because there's so much change and it's happening so quickly. You know, there's some great, great lessons that can be applied to, you know, applied to print that are, you know, that really make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And so sometimes we're watching traditional media. Sometimes we're watching big media groups. Sometimes you might be reading something about a hospitality group that has nothing to do with chiropractors, but you go, boy, look, that's interesting. Look what they're doing at their website. They're doing this and an increased engagement from people looking to rent a hotel room. Well, hang on. Does that correlate to my chiropractors or my RV dealers or my attorneys? Be open to the possibility. That's the very essence of what being a change agent is you're not just initiating the change, but you're looking for the possibilities and the potential paths that might help you. So coming around the bend, it's always valuable when implementing change to look at building an ROI, tie in bonuses, tie in other win incentives for the team, depending on what you're doing. Because whenever you're sort of working in and around change, you know, you're going to be able to potentially drive more revenue, or reduce expenses, or on the other side, create more profitability. Those are all really, really good things. And as a change agent, take ownership. Right? Keep your focus. Keep your energy high. Right? Look at Bill and Melinda Gates. Right? Bill and Melinda said, hey, we're going to go out in the world and we're going to focus on health care issues that increase longevity, right? People will live longer and live happier and healthier lives. Look at some of the things that they've attacked, like malaria, that has nearly been eradicated, you know, where they've literally said every 90 days we sit down and we do the ROI and we decide what that change is, what the exact steps are going to be, and how we are going to accomplish that on that side. And that has been their focus. And by the way, they are constantly in change, and they're fascinating to read and follow if you have an interest, especially the things that they put out across Twitter and some of their social media channels. But taking ownership goes like this, Jed. If you're going to cross from this side, which is the safe side of where you are, and you're going to make a decision about a change you're going to make on your website, your circulation, your distribution, your formatting, your frequency, you're sitting on this side of the river. Until you make that change, life is pretty cozy. You look in front of you, and there's a raging river, and that raging river is what? The change. And it can either grow really well, and I'm going to get from this side of the land across that river to the other side, and it's going to be nirvana because we will have accomplished our goal. But if we lose our focus, if we lose our energy, that raging river may do what? Blow us downstream. Okay? There might even be a bear. There might even be a bear, Jed, trying to come up on our island. What do you think of that?
Right. But one thing I just want to add to that, though, Ernest, is that I'm sure there's some examples to the contrary of this, but I feel like when you're making change, it's rarely that the other side of the river, everything's going to be fine. It's more, you know, there's a path, right? Like there, because the truth is that it's very rare that any sort of one change is going to sort of have all of the effects that you dream of, right? It's usually goes beyond that, right? You have to, you know, you have to keep moving down that path, and you know, it's more of a process than a destination, I think.
It is, but even in that process, it's still many raging rivers. Hey, we're going to do this.
Right.
Will that technology actually work? We're going to do this. Does that API really link into what we need? We're going to do this, but are we really getting the reporting or now the results, right? I mean, think about those. So even in those many examples, it is a journey, but in those journeys are small moments where you're looking across that river going, wait a minute, that didn't work. You know,
right.
We don't wash down the river. Okay, stop, reset, stop, restart, pull it back in again. You follow me on that?
Yep. Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I think I think sometimes people get discouraged when sort of the initial change that they had envisioned doesn't have the impact that they had hoped for. But you know, it's you know, you now have a different perspective on the problem, right? So
That's exactly it. For example, some of the things that we're talking about, you know, in some cases you might deploy software and spend less because for your software, right? Or you might earn more because we're driving more ad sales, we're getting better ad results, we're saving our renewals and so forth. Okay, in some cases we might just remove the friction. By the way, great examples of that: Uber. Uber, you know, Uber means no friction. I go, I need a vehicle at 10:42, and this is where I'm at, punch, and there it is. Now try to do that with a taxi. Even in New York City, you have to stand and what? Hail a taxi, right? Try to pull that off in the morning when there's nobody around, right? Or look at Airbnb. Airbnb has consolidated millions of what? Housing choices and options. They've actually been so successful, they've actually created a term on the other side that the media calls over-tourism. Yet literally so many people have been crushing cities around the world that it's daunting for the cities. Okay? So sometimes the friction, for example, I'll give you a very specific example. We worked with a media client that sold ads to realtors. Okay? There used to be probably 20 or 30 really large city and regional and national and global players. Today, basically, there are two, and they sit under one umbrella because one acquired the other. Okay? And I remember the conversations around send in your ad copy or send us your photos, and they had to either manually pick up photos or manually get the copy and then retype it. And there was, here comes the shift, the frictionless shift, come right into our software platform. Pop open your, put up your photos, drop in your cop, press send. It goes right to our art department. Now, that was a double win, right? You got a cost savings, and it was frictionless because realtors could engage. Then it became, hang on, if you want to change something on the web, pull it up. It'll change it in print, and the pipeline goes right over to the web, boom, and solves the problem on that side.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Another one of those examples. Okay. Let's see. Let's field a question here. I want to field this question for Mark in Texas, and he says, "How do you share poor ad results from a customer who has spent a large amount of dollars on a digital platform?" Comments on that, Chad?
Well, I mean, I think, assuming that because the digital platform, assuming that you know the information, to be true, right? I mean, that's what's great about tracking is that you're getting it firsthand. The way that we deal with that is to try to do it as early as you possibly can. So I guess that sort of my assumption based on your question is it the realization that the ad did not perform well came sort of at the end of the contract, right? But I think that the I think that, you know, the best case scenario is, you know, after the first day or after the first week or whatever the appropriate time is, you know, when you see it not performing well, you know, that's when you step in and you say, hey, I think we need to make a change. Because at that point, right, you have more options. You can change the creative. You can change the, you know, where it's running. You can change things to try to make it more effective. You know, I think a big part of this is just communicating with advertisers, is explaining to them, hey, it's not working in the way that we thought it would. Let's try something else. You know, maybe, you know, very often we find the offer in the ad, right, is something that has a great deal to do with the success or failure of a particular campaign. If an ad is being offered and it's just even slightly more expensive or slightly less expensive than a competitor, it can make an enormous difference in terms of response. So when it comes to, you know, sort of relaying bad news, I think, you know, when it comes, you know, I think earlier is better because you have more options. And if it's too late for that, the ads have already run their course, then I think, you know, the only option is really to try to, you know, to try to make it so that you're providing some sort of, you know, pathway to future success. You know, what did you learn from that failure?
Mm-hmm. And Mark, and to all of your comment about this, some of this starts right up front. Well, what kind of results are you expecting? What kind of results are you currently receiving? Let's talk about how you're going to track that. Let's address leakage on the other side. Let's address how you're showing up compared to your competitors. Gee, you're an RV dealer, but you only want to showcase 2 RVs. Do you realize all of your competitors are showcasing 42? By comparison, you're not side by side. Or let me share with you what they're offering versus what you're offering. Or let me share with you what their price points are, that they're only showcasing their used versus their new, or new versus used. In other words, having some real frank conversations up front and then tracking it along the way. And Jed, you said it spot on. You surely don't want to wait till the very end. That is not the way to handle it on the back end. Let's pause here. I want to finish up just on a couple of key points, a couple of takeaway points for all of you to remember as we're wrapping up here. And that is sometimes, you know, what happens when change doesn't go exactly as planned, right? And it's possible, and it happens. We have to start by doing what? Rebuilding the trust, right? We may have to explore other options. Just because it's broken doesn't mean we can't work around, find a way, find a new way, create a new way. You know, sometimes it means we're going to go, you know, around the fence, over the fence, under the fence, or build a new fence, whatever that might be. So certainly a path from that. So sometimes we take a half step back to go 3 forward, and especially with the speed and the rate of technology today. Also be aware that there are times in the middle of change that it can derail your professional path and career. So the caveat here is a reminder that, yeah, we're, as a change agent, we're going to surge forward and keep looking forward towards our goal. And we may break things along the way, but if you push too hard and you are that bull in a china shop, you can also alter your career success or derail entirely. Okay? So know when to stop. Know when that time is, and know when to step back. It's okay to step back a half step in order to go 3 forward. Do not be so overly bold that you're breaking relationships and trust and success along the way, because that is not a winning strategy. Being a change agent is vitally important. Embedding it in your culture is vitally key. Lining up all of the strategies to help your media team be successful, vitally important. Okay, but circling all the way back to the very beginning when we said, speak softly and carry a small stick. That's what we want you to think about as we wrap up here today. Okay? So, Jed, we've covered a lot of ground. We're coming right up on the top of the hour. We want to be respectful of everyone's very busy schedule. How about some closing words? I'll say some closing words, and we'll wrap up for today.
All right, great. Well, thanks, Ernest. You think you covered a lot of interesting information. You know, thanks to everyone for joining us. You know, if you want more information about MediaBids, feel free to reach out to us. We're always almost always here, and so happy to talk to you about what we do.
Beautiful. And do take the time. For those of you that already work with MediaBids, you know the wonderful success story and what they've done over the last two decades. For those of you that are new or listening to this and this is your first opportunity, please take a look at MediaBids. They are fantastic. And what they do, they'll help you bring additional revenue. Their advertisers will bring you additional street credibility, and you'll love working with them. And then lastly, come take a look at PowerHour.com. We've been working with media groups for the last 24 years. We have a fabulous ad sales academy that we host every Tuesday. It's our flagship, very similar to the work that we do here, except it's open mic. We field your questions real time. And frankly, if we were to take a look at the things that we covered today, we would probably be taking pieces of this and breaking it into a second or third academy week. We do things really tight, really focused, really specific, and we'd love to work together with you. So powerhour.com, always a pleasure. MediaBids.com, tied to Bid Jed and their world. Thank you so much to those of you that shared your questions. Jed, it's always a pleasure. I'm looking forward to our upcoming teleseminar and our guest who's going to be joining us.
Right.
So I'm very much looking forward to that. So we'll see all of you next month, okay?
Great. Thanks, Ernest. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Take care.